Blog Talk Radio.
Coming live from Pittsburgh, Benson Fixer Bring. Major League Baseball and all related things. Inside MLB. Inside MLB.
Good evening, Inside Movie fans. My name is Benson Fechter, and I'll be your host tonight on Friday, June 10th, 2016. We have a very exciting episode, so without further ado, let's get right into it with our opening topic. And if you read the show description today, you probably know we're going to be talking about Danny Valencia. So let's get into the Danny Valencia talk right now. This is his second season with the Oakland Athletics. It's his seventh season overall. He's really bounced around the big leagues, and he sort of found his niche, per se, with the Oakland Athletics. His power numbers, they've been coming on late per the last eight games. He's actually been hitting .536 with three home runs in that time span. And he's just been having an amazing season overall for the Oakland Athletics. And Billy Beane, I think, made another smart decision. He traded Brett Lowry, kept Danny Valencia, and Danny Valencia has proven Billy Beane right once again. Just a little bit of background on Valencia. 19th round pick in the 2006 MLB draft by the Twins. So he has really bounced around. He went to he was in Toronto last season. He said he learned a lot from Jose Bautista, and it was kind of interesting that he did learn a lot from Bautista, because Bautista is a seasoned vet himself. He bounced around the league before he found his spot with the Blue Jays, and Danny Valencia is just trying to find his spot right now, and maybe the Athletics will be his spot. Maybe not, but we shall see. He's having an amazing game so far this year. In 39 games, he is getting on base at a .387 clip. He's slugging .580, has 9 home runs, 22 RBIs, and a .968 OPS. And he is just doing amazing right now for the Athletics. Everything the Athletics could have imagined, he is coming through with. And I'm happy for him. I'm happy for the Athletics. And when I was doing my research for the show today, I came upon an interesting tweet. It was about Ron Washington's Fungo Bat. Now, Ron Washington, he is the coach right now for the Oakland Athletics, not the head manager. But he hits ground balls to Danny Valencia, and he has his Fungo Bat, which is a bat that, you know, ground balls are hit to it. And it's actually 20 years old, over 20 years old. And Danny Valencia said that Ron Washington, that's the first thing he packs on every single road trip. It travels everywhere he goes. And pretty impressive from Ron Washington. And after he resigned from the Rangers, I was sort of interested in where he went. I actually didn't know where he went until today. So Ron Washington, the Oakland Athletics, and his Fungo Bat, pretty interesting fun fact right there. Now, if you didn't know, I'm going to throw in a little bit of a college track right now. Super Regionals tonight. Miami will be taking on Boston College. And the reason why I talk about that is it actually directly relates to Danny Valencia and actually another teammate of Valencia's, Yonder Alonso. Both of them, they went, they played at the U, Miami, and they did well. They are now reunited in Oakland. But another cool thing, in Oklahoma, they actually played high school ball together. They didn't go to the same high school, but they did play, you know, in some summer leagues together. So Yonder Alonso and Danny Valencia, they definitely know each other well. And it's pretty cool that they are now reunited with the Oakland Athletics. And obviously, they're not off to the start that the Oakland Athletics want to get off to. But maybe they can turn around and be a surprise team this year. And going into the season, I thought the AL West was going to be a very competitive division. So far, it has been a competitive division. There's a big matchup going on tonight. Rangers Mariners, we'll get to that in just a sec. But the A's, they are trying to get back into the heat of the race. And Danny Valencia, he's sort of coming on like the A's were coming on. They started off slow, but he's starting to heat it up. And he hadn't hit a home run in 70 at-bats. Then he just went on and hit three home runs in one game. It is just amazing what he's been able to do. And nobody ever expects upper that to ever happen for you to hit three home runs in a game. But when it happens for a guy like Danny Valencia, just tip your cap to him after being drafted in the 19th round. Not super high expectations. He's up there, but definitely not in the first day of the draft, just like yesterday. But he has proven a lot of people wrong in his 7 seasons in the big leagues. And the second season with the A's is proving to be a fruitful one. And maybe he'll be seeing a spot in San Diego. I would not be surprised. I mean, he is having a pretty good year. If you take a look at his numbers, it's definitely all-star worthy. And if you vote every day like I do, then Danny Valencia would definitely be in that category. If you've been listening to the show, you know I'm a Pirates fan, so I just felt the Pirates roster from the National League. But I have been consistently putting Danny Valencia into my bout for the American League, and I can faithfully say that it is a smart decision. Then one of the things he has been saying, though, you know how the Royals and the Cubs, those guys stuff the bout. Okay, but Danny Valencia, he definitely deserves the credit deserved. I think he should at least be a bench player out there in San Diego because he deserves it. Now, I know we did a show a little bit while back about how it's the All-Star game, not the best 2 months of your career game. But Danny Valencia, good story. I want to see him out there in San Diego. I don't think he'll be a starter. I voted him as a starter, but with the Royals stuff in the ballots, the way they do, even though Mike Moustakas will not be eligible with his injury, I still don't think Danny Valencia will get the starting nod. But if I was, you know, the only one vote there ever existed, I definitely would put Danny Valencia into that. Okay, so as most of you know, the Athletics, they are in the American League West. And that puts us right into our next topic. We're going to be previewing the Rangers and the Mariners and just give a quick update on each of those teams. So going tonight for both of them, Derek Holland and Hisashi Iwakuma. It's going to be a great pitching matchup. And it also might be extending Jerickson Profar's hitting streak to 13 games. Now, Jerickson Profar, he sort of filled in with Rougned Odor out with a suspension with the whole Bautista-Odor brawl. And he has proven that to be successful. In that 12-game hitting streak span, he's seen 389, 12 runs scored. And Jerickson Profar, he's when he first came up, he was one of the most highly touted prospects there was. And he, with his 12-game hitting streak, are really helping the Rangers right now. They're 14-5 since May 20th. This is the best in the majors. And if they win tonight, it would tie a franchise record for 20 games. They are playing amazing right now. And it is just exciting to see what Jerickson Profar has been able to do in those 19 games since May 20th and in his own little 12-game hitting streak that he has going. And I picked him up in fantasy when Rougned Odor was dropped off, and I was looking at his averages for ESPN. He's averaging 9.1 right now, so I'm happy about that pickup, and I hope he continues his success for the Rangers' fate and for my fate as well. And the Rangers being 14-5 since May 20th, it is a little bit surprising, but it shouldn't be surprising because they have one of the best rotations in all of Major League Baseball. And the fact that they are adding Yu Darvish to that, and even though he is listed as day-to-day right now, and the fact that they have added Prince Fielder's Pop now to it, it's going to be an exciting team, and 14-5 does not surprise me one bit. This team could definitely be going to the World Series in October. I would not be surprised about that at all because their pitching is there with Yu Darvish and Cole Hamels. Derek Holland has been pitching well and all around fantastic so far by the Rangers, and they're just looking to keep it going. But good news for the Mariners, they're only 4 games back in the Rangers, so the division's obviously not over. I mean, the division's never over until somebody clinches it, even like in the NL Central, where Pirates and Cardinals are 10 games back of the Cubs. But for the Mariners, some good news going on tonight. They see the return of Leonis Martin to the team. He'll be rejoining the team tonight. So far, he is batting .262, he has 8 home runs. No, 9 home runs, which is his career high. He has 8 RBIs and an My bad. Switch it. 8 home runs, 9 RBIs, and an 822 OPS. So, looking to get that center fielder back. He is speedy. He will be a nice addition, per se, to the Mariners. We're looking to get into a division battle with the Rangers and close that gap tonight when Holland and Iwakuma square off. For the Mariners, some Felix Hernandez injury update right now. It's not looking like he will be back in that 15-day time span. It looks like he'll miss 3 to 4 starts is what I am hearing. He has a boot right now on his calf, so unless he gets all that off, it's not. He's obviously not going to be able to get on the mound. In fact, to keep his arm fresh, he's been sitting down on a chair in the bullpen and throwing. So if he can't even get off the chair to throw, then obviously not good news for Felix Hernandez. And he was having a pretty good season up to that date. His record wasn't that good, but he was 4-4, a 2.86 ERA, and 63 innings pitched, and a 53-26 strikeout-to-walk ratio. So it definitely would be big if the Mariners could get Felix Hernandez back, because Felix Hernandez, along with Iwakuma and James Paxton, who has just been sent up, I believe, I mean, they are pivotal parts of that rotation. And if they can piece it all together and the offense, along with Leonis Martin, can get things going, then this team could be going well. And they could definitely have a battle with the Rangers. And I feel like this is a Mariners that everybody expected last year when they were, you know, the dark horse pick to win it all. I think that was a little bit premature, but I think they've matured a little bit. And this team could really be something special this year. Once Felix Hernandez gets back, they can stay above water until then. Just tread water until their guy gets back. And I definitely think they will have a fighting chance to win this division this year, along with the Texas Rangers. So it'll be fun. The AL West will definitely be fun. We'll see how the A's do in the home stretch towards the rest of the year. But the I think the really competitors in that division are the Rangers and the Mariners. They've proven that they are right up there. So we will see how those two teams do. And if I have to pick a team to win the division, I'd probably pick the Rangers right now because they're just all around the better team. I've seen them play this year, and they are definitely extremely good. They have the long ball going, and when they have it going, I mean, nobody can stop them. And that rotation is dominant. Yu Darvish, he strikes out a ton of people. And if he can strike out the people at the rate he has been, the Rangers will be special. Cole Hamels, he's been great. I mean, he's been roughed up only like once or twice this year. Derek Holland has been great. And they are rolling right now. The Rangers are just proving that they have not gone away at all. Last year, they had to fight to even make the playoffs. They actually did win the division, which actually surprised me because in July, when they made the trade to get Cole Hamels, I was not expecting them to even make the playoffs. I was expecting that move to be for a next year thing. I mean, a lot of people were expecting that to be this year thing. And it is a this year thing now. And he is a pivotal part of that rotation, a pivotal part of that team. And if he can get it all together and Yu Darvish can pitch as well as he's been pitching, Prince Fielder's finding his groove right now, this team will be special. And I think it would be pretty cool if we see a Giants-Rangers World Series. Maybe the Giants can get their even year magic, and it's not a joke that the Giants could be good this year. We might get into that a little bit later. But the Rangers, they are playing fantastic. We have to take a quick break on Inside MLB, a quick 30 seconds. We'll be back to talk about a pivotal NL West matchup type, elite pitching. Kershaw is going up against Cueto. And Kershaw and Cueto, they right now are the 1-2 best ERA plus since 2012. It will be an amazing pitching matchup, and we'll get into that in a quick 30 seconds.
Star. The rental car with tinted windows.
We are back in Inside MLB. We've been talking about Danny Valencia and his resurgence with the Oakland Athletics. And also, we've been talking about the Rangers and the Mariners. We previewed that game. It's now time to preview another West Coast game tonight, as the Dodgers will be visiting the Giants in an epic rivalry. And I will get into everything that has to do with it. And pretty much for the next 15 minutes, we'll be talking Dodgers and Giants and all the big news with those two teams going on right now. So Kershaw versus Cueto. This is going to be an epic pitching match. Kershaw, I mean, feels like he's already one of the all-time greats. He is pitching amazing this year. Cueto, a beautiful pickup by the Giants. I personally didn't think that Game 2 of the World Series was enough for me, but he's proven me wrong, and he's been amazing. Love the signing by the Giants. They couldn't get Greinke like they wanted to, so who did they get? Cueto and Samardzija. Great pickups. And Kershaw, Cueto going tonight, both with extremely low ERAs. Kershaw's actually sub-2 right now, and Cueto's at 2.18, I believe. So, going to be great pitching matchups tonight, and we will see how it all fares. I believe Cueto's 9-1, and Kershaw is 8-1, and it's a 10-15 matchup, so I won't be staying up to watch that. But I definitely, when I'm checking out the box scores tomorrow morning, we'll be looking at how both of them did, because it will be a special pitching matchup. And if you will be staying up late tonight on this Friday night, I suggest tune in to Dodgers and Giants. I know they will be on MLB Network later tonight. If you don't have that, you can always check in on Game Day in the MLB.com app, because Kershaw and Cueto is a must-see matchup. And just to prove my point with that, those two are the 1-2 tandems in the best ERA plus since 2012. You have Kershaw at number one. You have Cueto at number two. Chris Sale, Zach Greinke, Max Scherzer, and Jake Arrieta. And actually, if you look at those stats, you can see that the Giants did make the right decision with signing Cueto instead of Greinke, because Cueto is ahead of Greinke in the ERA plus since 2012. Now, I know that's only one stat category, but if you also add Samardzija into there, then it was definitely a smart decision, I think, by the Giants to go along that route instead of the route of signing Zach Greinke for the outrageous amount of money that the Diamondbacks did decide to do. But Chris Sale, the crazy windup that he has, it's proven to be effective, and he is a dominant left-hander, and he's just proven that since 2012. Zach Greinke, he sort of bounced around the big leagues, the Royals, the Brewers, the Angels, the Dodgers, now with the Diamondbacks, and he sort of had a little bit of early season hiccups, but he sort of found his groove with the Diamondbacks, and Greinke's pitching well so far. Scherzer's pitching amazing right now for the Nationals. And obviously, Arrieta proved he's Parrieta this year by getting his second no-hitter against the Reds, and he has been dominant as well. Great pitchers, and the fact that Kershaw and Cueto are 1-2, that just shows that this is a special matchup. And people will be talking about Kershaw-Arrieta, but if you go to ERA+, Kershaw-Cueto is actually a better pitching matchup. And it's kind of funny to me that whenever you say, like, a great pitcher is doing something, it's always their second behind Clayton Kershaw. And that just shows that Clayton Kershaw is an all-time great already. If he were to hang up his cleats today, there's no doubt in my mind that he would be remembered as an all-time great, because he is just that good. Now talking a little bit about Johnny Cueto for a second, and how he was doing decent with the Reds last year, but when he came over to the Reds, when he came over to the Royals, it really sort of fell apart. And I think maybe the reason that might have happened was because of Salvador Perez. And I know that sometimes a catcher and a pitcher, they just don't click, okay? And I think one of the reasons might be because Salvador Perez, he is so tall. And sometimes Johnny Cueto, he wants to have that lower target. That might have had to do something with it. It might have just been a communication error, but something was not right. If that Game 2 in the World Series never happened, if Cueto didn't pitch as dominant as he did pitch in that game, to give teams that lasting image of him before free agency, I honestly don't think he would have gotten the deal he got with the Giants, and the Giants probably wouldn't have him right now. So that is definitely a key game for Cueto, and he definitely didn't make it look like it was a key game for him, because sometimes when pitchers go into a big game, what they like to do is sometimes they'll overthrow it. And when they overthrow the ball, I mean, sometimes they'll lose command, try to blow the fastball by people. And that's a little bit what the Salvador Perez was sort of saying about Johnny Cueto when he came to the Royals, okay? So he was trying to prove to be too much because he was in a pennant race now. He was trying to win the American League pennant with the Kansas City Royals, and he just couldn't figure it out. So he had to, he was trying to overthrow the ball, is what I think, trying to show people that his fastball is this fast or whatever. But I think in game two, he settled down and he proved to everybody that I'm here, I'm Johnny Cueto, nothing's wrong with me, my arms aren't hurt like everybody's been whispering about, and I'm here to stay. And the Giants, they saw that, they liked that after they couldn't get Greinke, and I think they definitely made the right decision by signing Johnny Cueto over Zach Greinke. Now, a lot of you, you might know Travis Ishikawa. He's been a postseason hero for the Giants multiple times. You might have known him as a White Sox this year. You might have known him as a Pirates back a couple years ago. When you hear Travis Ishikawa, you gotta hear Giants. And when the White Sox, when they DFA'd him, guess who picked him up? The Giants, they re-signed former postseason hero Travis Ishikawa. Let's go over his numbers with what he's been with the Giants. He's hit 180 home runs, 264 batting average, 327 OBP, and a 396 slugging. He's not really a big regular season guy, but when the postseason comes along and his name is called off the bench, he has proven to be big. Pennant-winning walk-off home run a couple years ago when he was actually on the Pirates for most of the season. And when postseason time comes along, Travis Ishikawa always shows up, and it always tends to be in a Giants uniform. Even though he might be on another team during the regular season, it feels like he always comes flocking back to the Giants when the postseason time comes around. So, that being said, where will he fit in the lineup if they decide to bring him up? Brandon Belt, he's definitely blocked by him. And Buster Posey, he's not a prototypical catcher right now. He also plays first base a good amount. So I do believe Travis Ishikawa will be called up. I just think he needs to get a couple games under his belt in AAA, maybe AA. Once he does that, he proves he can hit and he can field. He will be called up, and you will definitely see Travis Ishikawa coming off the bench again for the San Francisco Giants, and you might be seeing him being a heroic player once again in the 2016 postseason. Maybe he'll win another ring for the team that he has done so much for in the postseason in years past. I think it would be really special in his sixth season for the San Francisco. He'll now be going into, I guess, his seventh season. But I'm looking forward to seeing definitely what Travis Ishikawa can bring to the Giants. I don't think it'll be much, but I think it is a nice story that he is back with the Giants. Even though Belt and Posey will be blocking him of playing time, it definitely is special. So another big Giants news. Everybody is talking about Madison Bumgarner. What is his potential to actually participate in the Home Run Derby? And Giants management said they're going to sit down and they're going to make a collective decision if they're going to even allow Madison Bumgarner to participate in the Home Run Derby. Now, I think that they, if he's actually invited to the Home Run Derby, which he said he'll say yes if he is invited, will the Giants let him go? I think if he is invited, the Giants should let him participate because it just went in a bat, except he's trying to hit home runs. And he has proven that he definitely can hit home runs. He's hit off all-time great Clinton Kershaw before. And last year, 2015, he actually was on a 1,000-pound horse, right? He was taking the horse, and he had the World Championship banner in it. 1,000-pound horse. And they let him ride that. I think the Giants will definitely let him participate in the Home Run Derby because if they're letting him do something that crazy on a baseball field with 40,000 people cheering and yelling, and the horse doesn't get rattled. I mean, what if the horse did get rattled? I mean, Madison Bumgarner got hurt. If they're letting him do that, and they're letting him take risks like that, there's no doubt in my mind that they should definitely let him participate in the Home Run Derby. If they don't, I think that would be a bad decision on the Giants' part, because I think it would just be so exciting to see Madison Bumgarner go up there in the Home Run Derby. And what would even be more exciting what even would be a better story is if he actually won the Home Run Derby. I think there'll be more people tuning in regardless if Madison Bumgarner actually is invited and the Giants and him do accept. I think that would definitely increase viewer ratings by a ton, and rightfully so. So that's that on the Madison Bumgarner potential to participate in the Home Run Derby. I think he would do well, obviously, since he's done so well against Clayton Kershaw. And speaking of Clayton Kershaw, let's talk about how teams go up to bat. How do you game plan against a guy like Clayton Kershaw? How do you do it? Now, what I think is you have to beat him 2-1. Okay, usually you get one opportunity to do something against Clayton Kershaw. And you must strike at that opportunity. If you do not, you will not beat Clayton Kershaw. That simple. You can't go to the plate. You can't take pitches. Because if you take pitches, most of the time they're going to be strikes. He has that good of a pinpoint command. You know he's going to throw strikes. You have to swing at those strikes. Look dead heat early in the count. Adjust to the off-speed. I know he's an amazing off-speed, but if you look dead red early in the count and you get a good fastball to hit, you have to hit it. And if they get on base, then the guy behind him just has to do his job to get him on, get him over, and then get him in. Part two is that you have to pitch the opposing pitcher, Johnny Cueto. He has to match Clayton Kershaw inning for inning. Put up a zero when he puts up a zero. If he lets up one, don't allow that one to get back. If he lets up two, don't allow more than two. That simple. And the defense, it has to be stellar. If it's not stellar, you will not beat Clayton Kershaw. It's that simple. And I think it's going to be a great pitching matchup tonight. Johnny Cueto's strategy on the mound, really, is there's no strategy. I mean, he'll shimmy and shake up there. He'll quick pitch guys. He'll change his rotation. He will just do everything in his power to mess up the hitter's timing. And I think Johnny Cueto will be able to match Clayton Kershaw pitch for pitch. And I would not be surprised if there are no runs scored until both of them come out, or at least like one or two max, because this is going to be a great pitching matchup. And if the Giants, if they can capitalize on Clayton Kershaw early, and Johnny Cueto can prove that he is successful early on, and he can disrupt the hitter's timing like he is so good at, I think they'll have a good chance to win tonight. But if Kershaw is getting the Giants to freeze on curveballs for their knees to buckle, I think there's no chance that the Giants win, even if Cueto matches him, because eventually both of them will be out, and then it will be a battle of the bullpens, and I think the Dodgers' bullpen is better. But Giants seem to strike early. When they get the opportunities, they must be swinging at strikes because Clayton Kershaw is not going to throw many balls. Okay, let's get into some of the most memorable moments from the Dodgers-Giants rivalry. And I think one of the more memorable ones comes actually 7 years ago. On August 12th, 2009, there was a bunch of ejections and everything. Fast forward, Juan Uribe hits a walk-off home run, and this is on Peace Day in San Francisco, and they get into a brawl. Bochy's ejected. So many people are ejected. And actually, Tim Flaherty is actually the manager in this situation, and reportedly Bruce Bochy was yelling at him for putting Juan Uribe in a pinch hit, and then Juan Uribe came through big, and obviously Bochy wasn't yelling at him after. And word says when they got on the plane, Bruce Bochy was not yelling at him anymore. In fact, said, I would have done the same thing too. So pretty comical moment there for the Giants. And I think that was the most memorable moment from the Dodgers-Giants rivalry that I can really remember. Okay, real quick, the Dodgers, they have moved Julio Urias to pitch Sunday. I think it's a good decision because the Giants ballpark, it is a pitcher's park. I like it there. For the series, they have Kershaw going tonight, Kazmir going tomorrow, Urias going Sunday, and Kenley Jansen, he's at 158 saves, second all-time Dodger saves list. He is three behind Eric Gagne. Mm-hmm. Maybe he will tie him up in this series. All right, we have to take a quick break on Inside MLB. But when we come back, we are going to be talking about how the White Sox announced outfielder Austin Jackson out at least 6 weeks with medical meniscus tear in left knee will require surgery. What does this mean for the White Sox, who are trying to come back from their excellent start to the 2016 season? That's next. And after that, we might get into a little bit of Curtis Granderson talk and how many leadoff home runs he's hit this year. That'll be after a quick 30-second break on Inside MLB. We are back in Inside MLB. We've been talking about previewing the Dodgers-Giants matchup, seeing Kershaw Cueto go tonight. That will be an excellent pitching matchup. I hope you tune into that. And earlier in the show, talking about Danny Valencia and his resurgence. But just breaking news, and the whole White Sox and outfielder Austin Jackson will be out at least 6 weeks with a medical meniscus tear in his left knee. This will require surgery, and this isn't that big of a blow to the White Sox, but it definitely does have some impact on them. So if you're a fantasy guy, then Austin Jackson might not be proving to do much for you in these next 6 weeks, as he will be out with a medical meniscus tear in his left knee. So that's that for that. But what I do want to get into, actually, is talking about how Curtis Granderson, right now, he has 16 home runs leading off the first inning in his sort of Mets career. And this is the franchise record. And I think it's just amazing. Because a lot of the times, there happen to be, you know, leadoff home runs. The leadoff hitter can hit a home run. But leading off the first inning with a home run, it definitely is difficult. I mean, it's not easy to go up there and just look to hit a home run. Most leadoff guys, that's not their job. But Curtis Granderson definitely does have pop in the bat. And 16 home runs is a lot. I mean, some people don't even hit that in a whole season. And he's hit that alone in the first season in his Mets career. So definitely great for Curtis Granderson, great for the Mets. And it doesn't surprise me that comes on a Mets team either, because the Mets really, they, at least this season, they've been really feast or famine when it comes to the long ball. If they don't hit home runs, they don't really score. But when they do hit home runs, their offense can be as deadly as any offense. I think the key is when you are pitching against the Mets, keep them in the ballpark. Because if you can do that, then most of the time you will silence their offense, because their average is not that high. Their home runs are second behind the Cardinals, and they definitely can get the long ball going. But it really just spreads with the offense. If one guy gets one out, the whole team will get going. So if you can get them out of the ballpark, especially Curtis Granderson, then most of the time you will be doing well against the Mets. Another fact that I was looking at is yesterday, Jorge De La Rosa, he threw four perfect innings in relief. This is only the third time ever that a pitcher has pitched four or more perfect innings in Coors Field history. And it definitely is difficult to pitch that well. And Chad Bettis, he didn't really have that good of a start yesterday. But Jorge De La Rosa, he came on. He just threw up zero after zero after zero, shutting out a potent Pirates lineup. And the fact that he did that is just amazing to me, because nobody throws four perfect innings in Coors Field. And the fact that it's only been the third time that's ever done is really surprising. And Jorge De La Rosa came in relief yesterday and absolutely did amazing. I'm happy for him. And I'm happy that somebody actually did well as a pitcher in Coors Field, because really does happen. And I like to see rarities in baseball, because that's what it's all about. All right, so we are going to get a little bit into talking about all the suspensions being handed down. We will also talk about the AL East. So before we get into that, I'm going to bring up a brawl that sort of reminded me of the Manny Machado, Yordan Ventura one that went down. August 4th, 1993, Nolan Ryan was pitching to Robin Ventura. He hit Robin Ventura in the back for the White Sox. Robin Ventura charged him out. Yvonne Rodriguez was catching that game. And when I was watching some film of it, it sort of reminded me of the the Yordan Ventura Manny Machado brawl. So fast forward to 2016, 23 years after this brawl, you get what happened with Yordano Ventura and Manny Machado. Yordano Ventura was suspended 9 games, and Manny Machado was suspended 4 games. And I was sort of surprised that Manny Machado only was suspended 4 games. But I also get that he was only suspended 4 games, because I think it's easier for an American League pitcher to plunk an American League batter, because when an American League pitcher does do that, I mean, they don't come out to the plate. I get it. If you're a National League pitcher and you're plunking guys, at least you're going to have the nerves to step into the batter's box against the opposing pitcher. If you're Yordano Ventura, what are you going to do? Step into the batter's box maybe once or twice a year? One or two games a year? So, I mean, it's not going to be against the Orioles either, because they are not going to be playing in the National League Park against the National League team, because neither teams are I just lost my train of thoughts. So, besides that, we see Yordano Ventura being suspended 9 games. And when I first saw that, I thought it was a lot. But then I remembered his history. And one of his histories was August 12, 2015, when the whole Trout and Ventura thing went down. Trout hit a double off Ventura. Ventura didn't like it. Trout went on to score. Ventura was backing up home plate, and they got into it a little bit. So I get his past history. He also had the thing with the White Sox last year. So 9 games, I thought it could have been up 10 to 12 games. It definitely could have been that. But then Manny Machado will be suspended 4 games. I mean, he was the one that went out there. I remember what we were talking about. We were talking about the American League guys not being able to step up into that batter's box. But the National League pitchers do. And I think Yordano Ventura deserves a suspension. And I actually would have suspended him a little bit more if I was him. Him being Rob Manfred. Okay. So, that's really it for the Royals that I'm going to talk about today. But let's get into a little bit more Orioles talk and how last night they won their 20th game in comeback fashion. And right now they're leading the AL East by 2 games. And there really has not been that many opportunities to win baseball games this year. And the fact that the Orioles are already at 20 comeback wins is really astonishing. But it also, you have to look at it in a different way, too. Because right now, the Orioles, their record is 36-23. So let's say they did not win 50% of those comeback games. Let's say it was a fluke or whatever. You take away 10 wins, they would be 26-33. Let's say none of those comeback wins ever happened. This is really where it gets me. They would be 16-43. Now, you might be wondering, would that be the worst team in baseball? Well, if you compare them to other teams, yes, that would be the worst team in baseball. Because right now, the worst team is the Atlanta Braves. They're 17-42. And if the Orioles did not win all those games, they would be 16-43, which is sort of surprising. Then, if you remember, they won 7 straight games to begin the year. And now we are getting into sort of saying what ifs and all this. But, you know, it's sort of fun to do this, right? And if you take away that 7-game winning streak, what they really would be is 9-50. Now, that's saying if they lost all those 7 games. But still, 9-50. And you might be wondering, the Orioles might just be a little bit of a fluke. Now, I know they've been great, and Buck Showalter has been using his bullpen amazingly so far. But I will not be surprised if they fell off the face of the world in the second half. Because when I see that if you take away a little bit of luck here and there and you get a 9-50 record, that's definitely shown some concerns. And I definitely don't think the AL East standings will hold up with the Orioles being 36-23 and the Red Sox being 34-25. It just wouldn't happen because the Orioles are not going to come back every game. It just doesn't happen like that. You don't win this many games. I mean, they only haven't come back in 16 of their 36 wins. So if more than 50% are like that, it just shows me that they might not be that real of a team. And their offense, they have proved to fight back. I know comeback wins are a pivotal part of any good team's record, but if you're up there around over 50%, and if you do some things that can get you to a 9-50 record, which is absolutely awful, getting them to a 152 winning percentage, just take a little luck away here and there. It just proves that the Orioles might not be as good as everybody thinks they are this year. Now, you might be wondering, who else is up there with comeback wins? The Rangers, who are talking about being a good team, they're up there with 18 comeback wins. But I think the only difference between the Rangers and the Orioles is over 50% of their wins. They have 37. I know it's a little bit picking here and there. But the Rangers, they have won 37 games. 18 of them have been comeback wins. But they have proven that they can win not by coming back in the game. It's just that simple. And I think they will do well. I think they are meant to stay. And they do have some prospects that they can wheel and deal to get more talent if necessary. The Orioles don't have that talent because they really spent all their money in free agency. They don't really have that deep of a farm system. So they're going to have to stick with what they got, and their bullpen is going to have to continue to do well. And Buck Showalter is going to have to continue to use them well. And nobody can get injured. So if you take that all of that into account, the Orioles, again, they might not be as good as everybody thinks them to be. Another team with a ton of comeback wins, they come to third, are the New York Yankees. They have come back in 17 of their 30 games. And again, they are 30-30 right now. 6.5 back of the Orioles. And if you check out the American League wild card standings, you find them 3 games back. And I would not be surprised if they fell out of the wild card race and the division race at the end of the year. And I would not be surprised if the American League East looked a little bit like Yankees in last, Orioles there too. Because the Rays, they're 27-31 right now. That's really not a bad team. And I think they can piece things together and get better. But I really think the Orioles and the Yankees can really only go down from here because they've proven to be good so far and proven to beat everybody's expectations. Everybody talks about once a team like does better than people expect them to do, it's as if people think they will just get better and better. But what I think is if a team exceeds expectations, I think the only really place they can go is down. And that's where I think the Orioles and the Yankees are going. And I think the Tampa Bay Rays are going up as well. Even though the Orioles, they are 8-2 in their last 10. It's been amazing. Yankees are 6-4, so they're right up there. But the second half of the season comes rolling around. I don't think those teams will be up there competing for a playoff spot. Just my humble opinion there. So another question that I want to get into is talking about the Orioles bullpen and if it's underappreciated. Okay, Zach Britton and Darren O'Day, they are amazing. And I like how Buck Showalter uses those two. And they have 4 relievers now up in the 26 innings pitch range in very few games so far. And that also has to do with their great record. And again, their bullpen, it's starting to get overtaxed just a little bit because I know he's spreading out the innings, 26, 26, 26, and 26, but eventually it might come back to bite the Orioles later in the season. And their rotation, it might come back to haunt them at some point as well. So that being said, truly believe the only way the Orioles can go is down. And definitely, it won't go up from here. They will not be winning 61% of their games. And right now, they are on pace to win an astounding amount of games, actually. I was surprised when I saw this number. They are on pace to win 99 games, and that is a lot. It really is a lot. And the Orioles, they just are not that team that are going to be winning 99 games come the end of this year. It's just not what I'm thinking right now. So I think they will be going down. I don't think they'll be going up, and that's going to take us into our next break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about a little bit too early Hall of Fame talks, but I want to talk about Ivan Rodriguez and his case for the Hall of Fame in what he'll be able to do, along with all-time great catchers. And that will finish us out for the weekend, and we will be seeing you all again Monday. So quick break, then we'll be 15 minutes nonstop, and then you'll be having a wonderful weekend, I hope. We'll be back in 30 seconds. We are back on Inside MLB. We were just talking about a little bit Curtis Granderson and how he's hit 16 home runs leading off the first inning. Jorge De La Rosa, now he's the only third ever player to pitch four perfect innings in relief. And then a little bit of the Yordana Ventura, Manny Machado suspensions and all that. So I actually do have to make a correction. I've been being told that the Nolan Ryan Robert Ventura brawl is not really comparable to the Yordana Ventura Manny Machado brawl. Ryan actually defeated Ventura in that brawl, and Machado defeated Ventura in this brawl. So I apologize if you were wondering why I compare those two. But when I looked at the film, it sort of looks similar. I did not take into account the winner. I just took into account my eyesight, I could say. All right, let's get into talking about some early, way too early Hall of Fame stuff. This is really all we talk about in the offseason. But I just want to get a little bit into it because when I was doing some research, I stumbled upon Ivan Rodriguez. And I also stumbled upon this is his first year that he'll be eligible for the Hall of Fame ballot. So I thought, hey, this is a perfect way to end the show. So let's talk about sort of his credentials and his greatness that he's proven throughout the years. So he caught a major league leading 2,647 games, which is the most in Major League Baseball history. As durable as they come. I mean, when Yadier Molina was doing what he was doing, people were saying, oh, he's the next Ivan Rodriguez. He will catch more games than he caught. Then you see Salvador Perez catching all these games. He's going to be the next Ivan Rodriguez. And I know Ivan Rodriguez loved watching Johnny Bench when he came up. I mean, he was his idol. So I guess you could say Ivan Rodriguez was the next Johnny Bench. And now Ivan Rodriguez, I don't think he surpassed Johnny Bench in, you know, all-time best catchers. But he definitely is up there. I'll get into where I think he ranks all-time in a minute. But some of his more memorable things that he's done in his career. If you remember, when he left the Rangers, he signed a one-year contract, and he signed with the Marlins. Now everybody's like, Ivan, Pudge, why are you signing with the Marlins? They're an awful team. Well, hey, they won the World Series that year, and one of the more important part of winning the World Series was Ivan Rodriguez's play at the plate to end it. It was Game 4, 2003, and the NLDS at that big football stadium where the Marlins used to play, the Florida Marlins. And he caught the ball, played the plate. He held up the ball to the umpire, and he said, he's out, umpire. Umpire said yes with him, and they went on to win the World Series, and he was a big part of that team. After he left them, he went to the Tigers, and people were saying, Pudge, what are you doing going to the Tigers? They're awful. I mean, it feels like wherever Pudge is going, people are doing well. So he went there, and Dave Dombrowski told him that 2 or 3 years from now, we will have a good team around you, and we will go to a World Series. That's exactly what happened. So what do you know? Ivan Rodriguez, everywhere he goes, he won. So that has to do a lot with the things, too, that happened in his career. That's why I think he's Hall of Fame worthy, number one. Number two, 21 MLB seasons, catching that many games is absolutely amazing. He had a 296 average, which is almost 300. I get writers are probably going to say he didn't have that 300 average. Is that Hall of Fame worthy? All this and all that, right? But if you take into account what he did overall in his career, that's definitely going to be up there. 339 OBP, which isn't that good, but it's still I think it just complements his other numbers. A 464 slugging. He's having more of a defensive guy, but he also can get on base, get the hits that he needed to get. But one of the more impressive things, he was definitely known for his defense. He led the AL and caught stealing percentage 9 times with a 46% caught stealing rate in his career. And you're telling me that's not Hall of Fame worthy. The Raiders should definitely vote him in this year. I can see where they could knock him on certain things, but I would understand why they knock him on certain things. I get it. I just understand how this year they didn't vote Ken Griffey Jr. in unanimously. That didn't make sense to me. And I don't think it'll make sense to me either if Yvonne Rodriguez doesn't make a first bout Hall of Famer. It just won't to me. But a lot of things don't make sense to me that it makes sense to the Baseball Writers Association of America. I usually don't agree with them. A lot of people usually don't agree with them. But somehow, in those writers' heads, they agree with themselves. And a little bit of fantasy, you know, baseball news with the Giants. Infielder Kelby Tomlinson with his thumb has been moved to the 15-day DL. They recalled infielder Ramiro Pena, and they moved pitcher Sergio Romo with an elbow to the 60-day DL. Okay, with the Giants discussion, Kelby Tomlinson, he sort of came up last year. He was pretty good. So the fact that he'll be on a 15-day DL, it won't hurt them. Ramiro Pena, he'll just be a placeholder, and Sergio Romo, not good news, being moved to the 60-day DL. But I guess I'm being ridiculed again because I compared Yvonne Rodriguez to Johnny Bench, and I get that there will never be a new Johnny Bench and all this, but you never know. Baseball is a long sport. It's going to go on forever, and eventually there will be a new Johnny Bench, but not for the foreseeable future. And I'll get into my all-time catches rankings just in a moment. And again, Pudge Rodriguez, he definitely deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. I wanted to be a first-bout Hall of Famer. I hope you all want to be a first-bout Hall of Famer, and it would just be nice if that happened. All right, so a big discussion on my mind. I think you're going to like it too. Who do I think the best all-time catchers are? And number one, without a doubt in my mind, is Johnny Bench. There's just no doubt about it. When my baseball coach told me about Johnny Bench, I went home and I looked him up. I mean, I didn't really know much about him. I knew he was on the Big Red Machine when he was doing so well with Pete Rose and all that. But when I saw his numbers and when I saw how well he did in his career, you would really just, like, look at his numbers in awe about how good he is. It's just that scary to see how he is. And obviously, I think number two, who I add is Gary Carter, doesn't really come close to him. But Johnny Bench definitely is number one. I have Gary Carter at number two. And let me know if you agree with me as well. I have Yvonne Rodriguez as three, Carlton Fisk as four, Yogi Berra as five, and Mike Piazza as six. Now, I get that I feel like I might get most, change at that Yogi Berra position for having him, you know, a little bit lower. I have Bench, Carter, Rodriguez, and Fisk. I have as fifth all-time overall catcher. But I just really don't feel like I can quantify what he did back in those days. I know there's numbers and stuff, but you really just don't know really that much about Yogi Berra as you know about like Johnny Bench and Gary Carter, Yvonne Rodriguez, Carlton Fisk. You know a lot more about them than you know about Yogi Berra, and that's why I have those guys ahead of him. And I think they are rightfully so ahead of him. And then Mike Piazza coming in, I guess you could say last, but six all-time in my mind. So let me know if you agree with those rankings again. Johnny Bench, Gary Carter, Yvonne Rodriguez, Carlton Fisk, Yogi Berra, and Mike Piazza. I'll be looking up for to see what you think is what. All right, so to end the show, on a good note, I'm going to be talking about Trace Thompson, who is Klay Thompson's younger brother, and is really making a name for himself, I think. Anyway, so Trace Thompson right now, he is ready for the weekend to get ugly. I mean, everybody knows it. It's Dodgers versus Giants. So he's come to expect the nastiness, you know, rage, fury, harsh words, they will all be launched when Kershaw and Cueto step on the mound tonight. And really, that's just from the fans beyond the outfield walls. Starting as early as batting practice before tonight's opening game of the series, there'll be hackling and all these things will be going on. It's Dodgers-Giants. What do you expect? I mean, Thompson of the hated Los Angeles Dodgers, according to the Giants, of course, is venturing into San Francisco. Going to that, his blue cap really isn't enough for the fans to sneer. But adding spice to the proceedings this time, Trace Thompson is heading into the kingdom that belongs to his brother Clay Thompson of the beloved Golden State Warriors. See, in the Bay Area, Clay equals good. Trace equals evil. It's an age-old story, except this one spans multiple sports and teams from rival towns. So this weekend, when heckling has launched Trace's way, it won't really be about him and Giants fans. Instead, I think it will be about Bay Area sports fans and their unique relationship with the Thompson family. I really think that's what it's going to be about. The heckling themes, they are common. Clay is the real Thompson, the real athlete. Trace can't beat Clay in the game of horse, even if he's spotted the horse in most of the E. The dirty little secret is that all of the Clay-themed heckling isn't an insult at all. Trace loves being referred to as Clay's younger brother, even in an unflattering context. But a funny little thing has happened as Clay tries to work his way toward a second consecutive NBA title. Trace is actually making a little bit of a name for himself. He's emerging as a force in his own sport, the sport that we love, baseball. He's posting a healthy .292 average and 8 starts this June. And by quiet, that would be the world outside of the baseball career sections of Los Angeles. Even the optimistic Dodgers fans didn't predict Trace's rise with this new club after being traded from the White Sox this past offseason. Thompson really needed an Andre Ether broken leg just to make the opening day roster. Then when he did make it, he finally started the season as a late inning defensive replacement in the outfield. He quickly paid his dues following a rough spring training, blasted some timely home runs, and basically used his sporadic play to demand more playing time. He really hasn't established, one set position yet, but he plays nearly every day now, moving from one outfield spot to the next. If the different assignments are a distraction, he hasn't really showed it. His 10th home run of the year, which was 3 days ago against the Rockies, was his second game-ending home run of the season. He might be a rookie, but he is quickly becoming a veteran of the Gatorade dump. Even Thompson's manager, Dave Roberts, who had nothing but good things to say about Trace during spring struggles, had to admit he's surprised by the progress. Perhaps it was, slow to build. Perhaps playing for the Dodgers was the last piece Trace needed to rise to the level of his ability. The White Sox molded his abilities, but joining forces with another dynamic young player in Los Angeles, Corey Seager, has provided an essential piece of the puzzle. And I really think it's going to be sort of cool when Trace goes into San Francisco this year. Well, not this year, tonight. And faces off against the Giants where, the Thompson family's beloved there. Not Trace, but Clay definitely is. And I think San Francisco would probably be happy tonight if the Warriors ended up winning and Trace ended up winning with the Dodgers. I think they'd be happy. Best case scenario for the San Francisco Bay Area tonight is the Giants and the Warriors win. Maybe they'll want to see Trace have a big night. Maybe they'll just give in a little bit. All right, thank you for tuning in. My name is Benson Fector. You can head over to our own website at MLBinside.com. All the episodes are there in the archives. I try to write articles a little bit, so you can check them all out there. Also made a documentary, if you didn't already know about that. It's probably, if you go to YouTube, look up Opening Day Documentary. It'll be in the Inside MLB channel, so please check that out, even though it's past Opening Day. You might want to look at that because definitely put a lot of hours into that. And, again, go to our website, MLBinside.com, and I'll see you guys summer. So I'll probably see you Monday afternoon. I'll post it on the website. See you then. Have a nice weekend.